Welcome to Working Media with Rafael Bracero.
Welcome to a new episode of Working Media with Rafael Bracero. Today's returning guest, by popular demand, is Chris Holmes, number one best-selling author of Ignite Your Career, Strategies and Tactics to Unleash Your Potential. So we're super happy and thrilled to have her back on the show once again. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rafa, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's midsummer right now, so everything's good. Grilling, you having a good summer so far?
We are having a great summer, and I cannot believe August is tomorrow. It's or 2 days from now. It's crazy.
I know. It's gone by quick. It's definitely, it feels different than last summer, that's for sure.
Without a doubt. And yet it's kind of weird, everything going on with the Delta variant and everything else. So
I know. We're not out of the woods yet, but hopefully getting out soon.
Absolutely.
So like I said, yeah. So you're definitely by far the most popular guest that we've had in the podcast so far. And I think that just speaks to the fact that, you know, really you're bringing a lot of practical career advice to the conversation. So the last time we spoke, we talked a little bit about your background. We talked about, your career, you know, prior even to becoming a recruiter, right? You know, working at Kraft and some other great places, and then also developing career goals that align with your strengths, which, you know, was obviously what a lot of the things that are outlined in your book. In this episode, what we wanted to do was to go deeper into the realm of marketing career advice, and particularly marketing career advice for mid-career professionals, which I'm kind of arbitrarily defining as, brand manager level. And this would be a play in three parts in terms of the structure of this conversation today. One is getting the job in the first place. The second one would be keeping the job. And then the third one would be kind of leveling up. Let's just start with the basics. I mean, getting the job. You know, what are the tips that you would have for somebody in that situation, whether it's interview prep, their resume, cover letters, networking?
Yeah, so the first thing, Rafa, I would tell you is to know the role you're looking for. To really have done your homework and figure out where do you want to go, not just in terms of what is the job you want, but what type of culture do you thrive in, the size of the company, you know, what is your long-term goal also, so you make sure whatever role you're going for next has you on the right path. So that's the first thing. So, because it doesn't matter what role you get it and how high the title is and how much money you're making, if you're on the wrong path, it doesn't matter how fast you're running. Then what you need to do is the first thing is work on your resume, because your resume is your calling card. And I am a huge believer that resumes should not be fancy. Resumes should be clear and concise and compelling. They should tell people who you are, where you've been, the brands you've worked on, what you've done, and what you've delivered. And they should be really easy to read and see what you can deliver for the company you're going. So if you don't have a strong resume to represent you, you're not going to get picked up. That's the first thing.
Right. So on the resume one, would you say that a one-page resume is still recommended, or is it okay to have a two-pager?
I pretty much push all of my candidates after 1 year in marketing to go to two pages. Out of business school, they make you stick to one page. But beyond that, I really want my candidates to put all of their responsibilities. I tell them I want them to show all the boxes they've checked off. And you can't do that with a one pager. So I push people to go to two pages. And as you progress in your career, the responsibilities get less and less, because they're just assumed that you've done these things, you've done the analysis, you've, you know, checked off the boxes, and the accomplishments get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the difference. But two pages after a year in marketing is absolutely fine and represents you well.
And I also see that some folks, not many, but at least some folks do a resume that's really by skill set rather than by role and kind of a chronological order. Is that recommended? I'm usually not a big fan of that, but it's, I mean, it is clear in the sense that it at least highlights those particular skill sets that maybe employers might be looking for.
Yeah, I agree it does that, but what it doesn't do, Rafa, is I don't think it sets you up for a productive interview. And that's the other thing a resume really does. And truthfully, when people interview you, they usually like to go sequentially. And so doing a resume by skills doesn't allow people to do that. So I am not a huge fan of that. If you really want to have an extra page where you have, you know, all of your P&L experience in one bucket and all of your innovation in a bucket, you could have a third page that they might choose to look at or not, but I don't recommend that as your resume.
Got it. Maybe you put that on your cover letter if that's something that you feel is important to highlight.
Especially if the role is pure innovation, you might have three bullet points talking about the three different white space innovations that you focused on.
Great. So then in terms of cover letter, what I hear is nobody reads the cover letter. what do you recommend for the cover letter? Is that still relevant in today's market?
Well, it's funny because I am not a big believer in applying online. To me, that is a last ditch effort when you're trying to go for a job. So there are, you know, applying online is kind of like playing the lottery. Or, you know, it's the lowest odds. It feels good to push that button. It feels like you're productive, but 99.9% of the time you go into the black hole and you never come out. So much more productive ways of doing it are, if you see a role you're really excited about, the first thing I would do is if you have a trusted recruiter, call them and say, are you either working on this role or do you know senior leadership at this company that you can refer me to? And if they say, no, I don't, I'm just going to get your way. You go to the second thing, which is, do you know anybody well who works at that company or knows a senior leader at that company where they could literally send your resume with an endorsement to that senior leader? Because that way you don't go into that black hole, you go directly to that senior leader and your chances of getting a day in court are incredibly high versus applying online. The other thing you can do is look and see if there's anybody from your college or business school who works at that company and you could reach out to them. Many companies will offer their employees incentives if they bring people forward who end up getting the job. So they're incented to bring people forward that fit the job really well and know that they will endorse you and send your resume along if and only if you're a really good fit for that job. But those are all different ways of applying for the role that are much more effective than applying online. Now, if you do, Rafa, have to apply online, the smartest thing to do is look at the job, pick out the 3, 4, 5 skills that the job calls for, and make sure that they are front and center on your resume, because most of the time now, artificial intelligence is what pulls the resumes out of the pile of 100 or 1,000 so that a human looks at them for that 8 or 10 seconds. So make sure that those key skills, if you've done them, are front and center.
In the kind of executive summary section or there, and then also in the actual roles themselves?
I would say there's the executive summary, and then you can put a skill section underneath with bullet points. And the only time I tell people to put that is if you're applying online, then I would have that in there.
Great. How do you think about and how do you prepare your candidates for when they're actually finally do land that into? What are the things that you recommend that they do?
So the longest chapter in my book is on interview prep, because I believe not doing interview prep is like going to Harvard and leaving before your last final of your last class. It's foolish. You've worked way too hard to get here not to do extensive interview prep. And I have my folks do incredibly deep prep on themselves. I have them write out their own stories. Like, you know, if somebody says, what are your strengths? And you rattle off leadership, initiative, and team building, and you leave it at that, nobody's going to remember that. But if you say leadership, initiative, and team building, and let me tell you a story where each one allowed me to achieve my goal, and you tell a story in the STAR format, people will remember the stories and thereby believe and remember that that's a strength of yours. So I have my people write out index cards in the STAR format and practice those. So it's really important to do that. So that's the first thing, knowing yourself, your story inside and out, and practicing questions that you know are going to come, like what are your weaknesses? If you've made a lot of moves, you need to have answers, not defensive answers, just very rational answers that take issues off the table. And then the other thing, Rafa, you need to do is you need to do homework on the company. Unfortunately, over my 25 plus years, I've had way too many people lose jobs when companies come back to us and say, Rafa did great in the interview. We like him. We think he's a really good fit. He could do the job, but we're not going to offer because he didn't know anything about us. So obviously he's not interested in us. So homework on the company is critical as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. One of the things that I like to do when I'm interviewing, particularly for companies that are public, you know, and I think this is something that most people don't even think about is, you have earnings calls for these companies every quarter, and yeah, there's usually an audio file that comes along with that call where the C-suite is getting peppered with questions about their company, their products, you know, things that are not even out yet. So, you know, I always find that those are good way to get really valuable information about kind of a strategic initiatives and kind of moments, right, where the company is at that point. And typically it ends up kind of coming into the conversation in some manner. And it is at least well received, I think, in the standpoint from the standpoint of like, wow, this person really like did the homework.
I think that is a great idea. And for marketers, the other thing is go to the store. Go to different yes. channels and take a look at the product and the competitors on shelf.
That's good advice. I'm starting to see moving a lot more frequently from role to role. Somebody might be at a company for 5-10 years. Now it's being, you know, a couple of years, and then they're off to the next thing. What's your perspective on how that is perceived by employers? And then how does a candidate kind of effectively manage that conversation if it is potentially an issue for a company?
It's a great question, and it's going to depend on the company. My sense is for some of the high tech and younger companies, it's more the norm. It's kind of like when I was growing up, agency people moved all the time. It's what you had to do to move up. And so it depends on the corporation. I can tell you, we have some clients where it's a red flag and it just doesn't matter the rationale, even if it's good, it's a showstopper. But others will listen. So sometimes people move because of family situations. Sometimes people move to get better training. Sometimes people move for passion. So as long as you have rationale, where you can get somebody nodding up and down, that is the key. And the second you get defensive about it, you're out. So I would tell you, just have rationale, and that's the best you can do. Some people you'll never get over with them, and other people you'll be just fine.
Taking your advice, and they do all the right things, and so they get the job. Now what? So now they're a freshly minted brand manager. What are the keys to success in that type of role, in your view?
So as a brand manager, I think so much of it is recognizing that while you own the brand or you're leading the innovation, you are working with cross-functional partners who are experts. And bringing them in and recognizing and valuing their expertise and treating them as true partners, I think, is a huge part of the value and the challenge for brand managers. So that's the first thing. soaking up the knowledge from them and getting them to partner with you and be excited, because in reality, they have too much on their plate and they're going to choose whose business they focus on first. And you want them feeling ownership of your business. The other thing I'll tell you in my book, one of the things I talk about is the different phases of your career. And there's the learn, the do, and the leverage phase. And the learn is when you are building your skill set. And that's kind of when you're an ABM. You know, once you get promoted to brand manager, you're taking those skills and you're applying them to build something. And so that's the doing phase. And that's where you are with a brand manager. And you want to take those skills and apply them to build your business. But I would tell you, you want to have an open and transparent relationship with your boss. You want to use them as a resource. I'm a big believer in you don't go to them asking for advice without having a recommendation to have them react to. And you're always open to not criticism, but people giving you feedback because you're new to the job. And anytime you're new to a job, there's a lot of learning to be had. And recognizing that and continuing to build and grow your skill set is really important at this point.
No, I think that's very solid advice. How about the gnarly issue of navigating office politics in marketing?
I think that's a great point, Rafa. And I think sometimes people are going to be adversarial, or you're going to feel like they're throwing roadblocks up. And instead of getting mad and frustrated, sometimes take a step back and be human, because you don't know what's going on in their world. You don't know if they have a personal situation. It has nothing to do with you. And so I am a big believer, and I learned on, you know, myself, having gone through this with people, you know, if you take a step back and invite them for coffee and or for lunch and sit down as a real person and just kind of say, hey, I noticed you've been off. Is everything okay? You know, what's going on? Is there anything I can help you with? Versus coming at it as you're in my way. Kind of turn the table and see if you can figure out what's going on with them, or ask their advice about, you know, I sense you're not happy with how things are going. I'd love your thoughts on what I could do better, where you feel like the project isn't going well. And I have found if you go at it that way, it's shocking how the tables turn and how, first of all, surprised they are that you're taking the time.
I'm assuming most people don't do that probably, right?
They don't. And because most people, especially in marketing, marketing is kind of, as you know, the king or the queen. And oftentimes we forget that these support folks are the experts, and they oftentimes have 20, 30 years. And here we come, these brand babies who really, what do we have? 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 years of experience, but they know so much more. So if you go to them and value them and treat them as humans, it's amazing how these people who maybe were adversarial at one point are going to become your advocates. So that's from my experience, my recommendation. And you try that and you talk to other people. And if that doesn't work, then maybe you talk to your boss and say, hey, I'm really struggling. Do you have any advice? Have any other people dealt with this? What would you recommend? But I would recommend going human to human first and see if you can deal with it yourself.
Now, let me touch on something you said before, managing your brand director. How do you see that being the most successful?
And I think that's a great point. Somebody told me this once and it stuck with me. They shared with me that the way they always dealt with their boss is they kind of positioned it as, my job is to make you look good. And so I would love your help in making sure that this presentation really represents me, you, and our team really well. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because I mean, it's you're aligning the interests for sure.
Right. And so I think if you do that, it works well. I mean, Rafa, I'll tell you, my boss at O'Connell Group, Brian, who I adored, you know, he joked with me for many years. He said, Chris, when you started here, you first came to me and said, what do I do? Then you came to me and said, this is what I did. What do you think? Then you came to me and said, hey, just FYI, this is what I did. Then you stopped coming to me. And he said, that's kind of your progression. and I don't think it's that different as a brand manager. But I think I probably could have done it better at the beginning by going to him and saying, hey, Brian, you know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I'd love your expertise because you've been doing this for 20 years so that I do it right from the get-go. That's the learn. Looking back, how I would have shifted what I did at the get-go.
When it comes to managing that relationship with your direct and then your one-up manager, do you ever see any dissonance between those?
Yeah, no, it absolutely can. And it's a thorny one because sometimes you have to tread really lightly. And I've seen all different ones where, you know, I've seen people whose direct bosses are incredibly challenging, but their boss's boss is wonderful. And so it's kind of a minefield. And so that's where I think when that type of thing happens, you know, I would say you reach out to other mentors in the organization if your current boss is really challenging, and you get support wherever you can to help you with your job, to help you manage a situation. And I'll tell you, Rafa, before I went into recruiting, I worked for what I'll call a horrific boss. And it made me question myself. It truthfully, I was depressed. I was, you know, uncertain, and it was awful. And it wasn't, and I was embarrassed, truthfully. So I didn't say anything to anybody outside of my immediate family because I was just thinking I was bad. And it wasn't until I got out of that and left that I talked to other people who had worked for that same person who had the exact same experience. But because I was too embarrassed to share it, I didn't have that support network. So I would tell other people who are going through that, that it's not a bad thing to reach out to other people who have worked for that person and just say, hey, I'm running into a couple of roadblocks. You know, can you share with me how did you work with this person? And oftentimes they have had that exact same experience and may be able to either help you navigate it or may help you realize it's not you, it's them, which helps enormously.
Right. And I think what I also hear frequently is that the thing that most defines your experience at a particular company is your direct boss, right? More than like the cool project or the brand that you're working on or any of that stuff. So that is the most important relationship to manage.
Without a doubt, I think the boss and then the culture at the company is really important too. I think when I think back to the jobs that I've loved, it oftentimes aligns with, do I fit the culture?
Right.
Does it feel like home? You know, can I be myself? And if that's the case, I can do any job and be happy.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And actually that kind of makes me think about contemporary work culture. I could certainly say that there's like a huge difference, you know, even one decade to another in terms of what the cultures are looking like, particularly in marketing, right? I mean, even the campaigns are reflecting a lot of those changes. So have you come across any situations where, like, let's say kind of maybe more your more senior folks in marketing that you're recruiting for are like, well, it's like, this is different than it was before, even though it's the same brand and the same company, it's completely changed. And how is that being kind of navigated by these parties?
You know, it is. It is a different mindset. And I don't even know how to explain it or why. I think part of it is, you know, Rafa, when you and I started, you know, CPG was the place to go. I still think personally, it's the best training ground because you get the strategy, the project management, the leadership, you know, all of those things that are so transferable, whether you stay in CPG forever. I still think it is a phenomenal career to start with. But because tech is so hot and that culture is so different, it is a different mindset for generations. And I think it shows up in, you know, whether people want to be remote or in the office. It shows up in terms of expectations, in terms of promotions, what people are willing to do, what, you know, whether they are looking for the foundation or just following their passion. This generation right now is incredibly passion driven, which I applaud them for. And yet I keep on trying to pull them back and say, passion is wonderful. But when you're talking about your career, do not forsake your foundation because you need that strong foundation to build a strong career.
Right. No, that's a great point. I mean, it's before you can soar like an eagle, you need to kind of develop your muscle power, your wings, your wingspan. So I think there is something to be said for that for sure. And it is definitely a bit of a generational difference, I think, you identified it well.
Yeah, it is, you know, and it's completely evolving, and it is not everybody in the generation by any means. There are, as we know, anomalies all over the place.
Of course.
But it is very interesting.
So that's a good transition to the kind of leveling up, basically, as you're looking at getting up to director, moving up to VP, then, you know, maybe starting to scratch on C-suite. What is your sense of how many folks actually kind of make it all the way up those ranks? And how does that transition look from a macro standpoint? Because, I mean, you talk to so many people.
All right. So I'm going to share with you an analogy. We talked learn, do, leverage. And you're talking about the leverage phase of your career. And that's when you have built some businesses, you know how to do it, and you're ready to take your experience and build businesses and brands and organizations through other people. So an analogy that I share with people, it's a great visual, is if you think about your career like a tree, when you're an ABM in the doing phase, what you're doing is you're building your trunk. And the goal is to get high up on the trunk and to, before you branch off, and that's where the leveraging is, you want to get high up enough that there are a whole bunch of branches. And so that's where you can leverage. And Rafa, you can leverage in CPG, but the beauty of the leverage and CPG foundation is you can go to durable services, high tech, sports marketing, you know, QSR, you can go to all these different branches. And if that branch doesn't work out, because you've gotten to run a couple businesses, you can come back to your brand management, or you can go to another branch. So if you went to QSR, you can go to hotel, or you can go to Amazon, or you can come back to CPG. So it's not at this level, it's not just that you have to go straight up in CPG. Once you get to this level, people I'm seeing are leveraging their experience in so many different industries. And that's the beauty of the CPG Foundation.
Absolutely.
But I tell people you want to get up high enough because otherwise there are no other branches to go to. If you go out on a branch early on and that branch doesn't work out, you got to come back to where you left off.
But so define what would that brand be? So just defining it like for as an example, for instance.
Yeah, I tell folks that you want to get up to the at least heavy senior brand manager level. So run a couple businesses. And that says you are in that doing phase and you've done multiple times. and you know exactly how to do it, and you're about to go into the leveraging phase. And whether you leverage in another CPG or another industry, you're primed.
Great. That's very helpful. Yeah, and you covered like the transition. So, I mean, and you could even transition to a complete, you could even transition to a nonprofit. Because obviously nonprofit still does a lot of marketing functions as well. So it's really the world's your oyster.
And we're actually working on a really cool role right now with a group that focuses on the Seattle homeless. And we have a great director of marketing role is doing MarCom for them. So absolutely, nonprofit hires a lot of people from CPG.
That's fantastic. So let's go to going from, let's say you've gone from senior brand manager to you made it to director, and now you're maybe a VP and you're looking to kind of get up to that C-suite level. What is the, just from the folks that you've worked with, what is the thing that defines success to kind of make it to that level?
I think it's strategic muscle. So really being able to turn businesses around and be able to demonstrate that you know how to set the brand and the business on fire. And then I think it's also how to build an empowered culture, because at this point you're leveraging through people. And I think there truly is, it's as important or maybe more important to be able to hire and develop a world-class team at this level, because without them, you're never going to be successful. So I think those are the two things. And then also, Rafa, coming out of last year, I think the people who are agile and really can navigate through challenges and inspire people, it's also something that companies are looking for more than ever.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. What do you think of this job market? I think we talked a little bit about that in the last episode, but what are your thoughts now in terms of hiring, recruiting? How do you see that?
So the job market is going crazy, but, and I'm going to put a great big but on that, it's going crazy looking for top talent. So we have more jobs than we can fill right now, truthfully. But companies are not willing to give on mediocre people. So they, coming out of last year, many companies, even though in CPG, many companies had best years ever because people cooked at home and everything else, but they didn't have to do much marketing at all. So many companies, you know, as we talked about, streamlined marketing, laid off their lower performers, and now they need to hire because they recognize that innovation marketing is really important going forward, but they're looking to build their strength, their bench strength, and hire the future leaders. And as such, they want the best of the best, and they're not willing to give. So we are finding that the great people are getting multiple offers, and the mediocre people are having a really hard time getting jobs.
Right. So it's an embarrassment of riches for the top tier, and then everybody else is just scrambling.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to have a great resume and to do an amazing job with your interview prep, because even if you're not, your background may not be an A+, you still may be an A+ player. You may be that diamond in the rough, and you want to do the homework so that you can show your shine.
Great. That's good advice. Any other thoughts for folks that are in the job market or they're currently in a job and they want to maximize their opportunity?
So I would say two things. If you're in a job and you're not really happy, take a step back and really assess what you've loved in past jobs and what you haven't. I'm doing coaching with somebody right now Because we offer coaching through our website also. And the other thing she did, which I loved and it has been really enlightening for her, is she reached out to people she's worked with in the past and she asked them, what do you think I'm great at? And she got some really good learning from that. And so do that, do your homework so you can really think about what job do I want next? And where do I want to go? And then the other thing I would tell people is, even before you do that, you should be making networking a part of every single day. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes is all it takes. It's kind of like, you know, putting money away for your 401k. You know, you put it away, you don't even think about it, but boy, when you retire, are you going to be glad you did it? 10 minutes, you know, sending out two or three emails, spending time on LinkedIn, liking posts and messaging people, reaching out to people you've worked with or went to school with, staying connected and having those conversations will pay off enormously. So I would urge people to do that as well.
What's a really effective way to network in your view? And then also, you know, kind of next level, right? Like getting somebody to be your mentor, essentially.
Right. So Rafa, there is an entire chapter in my book on this. So people can get much more thorough than what I'm going to share. But, you know, like I said, you can network with people going all the way back to your high school. I mean, and call your high school. They have an alumni office and ask them who is in your field. People like talking to people they have some connection with. Do the same thing with your college. And then today, you are so lucky versus, you know, when our parents were in the workforce, staying in touch with people back then was hard. Today, it is a breeze because of LinkedIn. All those people you worked with in past jobs, look them up on LinkedIn, send them a note. When they get promoted, make sure you tell them congratulations. Have those conversations. Reach out to your past professors that you really loved. But just, you know, don't let those relationships go dormant. And, you know, also people in your industry who you really respect, who you've heard speak, send them a note and ask if they'd be willing, once we can have coffee with people, to have coffee, or they'd be willing to spend 5 minutes on the phone with you because you so admire them. You'll be surprised how many people will. So I would tell you that's what I would do to start. And then also on the flip side, offer to mentor people from your business school or your college and be there to help other people up because it's got to work both ways.
I've done that quite a bit at USC and that's very gratifying to help young marketers in their career. So that's I definitely agree with that.
Absolutely.
So Chris, how can people reach out to you if they're interested in continuing the conversation or want to ask you questions about your book? And, you know, obviously, hopefully we hope everybody picks up the book. There's a lot of great info in there. Or they're potentially looking at some roles that the O'Connell Group might be able to facilitate.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways. First of all, if you go to igniteyourcareerbook.com, you can get the book there, and then you also can see all the services we offer, which is complete coaching, resume writing, interview prep, and negotiation support for when you get that offer, but you want somebody to help you negotiate through that. So that's that. You can reach me either at Chris, K-R-I-S, at O'ConnellGroup.com or Chris at IgniteYourCareerBook.com. And the O'Connell Group, we specialize, as you know, Rafa, in both marketing and market research and consumer insights. And we'd love to help anybody fill their job, or if anybody is looking for a job in those fields, we'd absolutely love to help you as you navigate your career.
Fantastic. And we'll be sure to put that contact information in the episode descriptor. So thank you for that. And Chris, thank you again for another amazing conversation. Really got a lot of great insights there. So I really enjoyed it today.
As did I. Always love talking to you.
Great. So we hope you enjoyed today's episode of Working Media. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast, and also share the podcast with other marketers. This is Rafael Bracero signing off. Until next time. Thank you so much.